Right, Claire, so lots changed since I spoke to you 3 years ago. Can you tell me what the biggest things are that have altered in your land here, in your holding?
Well, we're just letting the land now and haven't got any livestock of our own. And I'm really looking forward to coming out of stewardship because we will manage our fields differently. We'll still manage them for conservation, but we won't be hidebound by regulations that seem to be the same for the whole of the country, whether you're in Lincoln, Pembroke, East Sussex or Northumberland. We're all treated the same, and that can't work because even round here, the best way to manage a meadow will vary from here to the farm over there because the land's different.
You've been here for how long now, Claire?
12 years.
What would you say are the big things that you've learned about your patch of land in that time?
We had a big meadow. It's interesting talking to the Natural England officer. He's agreed that they have learnt over the last 10 years of stewardship, people who started their agreements 10 years ago, a lot of us have had the same experience, that actually, rather than ending up with meadows full of beautiful flowers, we've ended up with meadows full of docks and thistles. And Natural England said, actually, we've learnt from it too, so our prescriptions and the way we suggest that you would manage it would be different now. So they're always being informed by what's happened. And he said, if you come into stewardship 3 or 4 years later, your prescriptions may well have been different, which I thought was quite interesting.
So this is a juggernaut that's a bit slow to turn.
Yes. It's interesting because we were only allowed to top one third of the field, and because I think there was probably quite a big seed bank of thistles, what's happened is that we haven't been able to get on top of it, so the thistles have got on top of us instead. If we'd been able to top the whole field a couple of times a year to get rid of the thistles as they've come through, I think we'd have ended up with a better pasture. But I don't know, but that's what we're going to try. So, come back in 10 years' time and we might have slightly less thistles.
Have you seen farms nearby here that are doing what you think are the perfect thing?
There's a couple of lovely older farmers just across the road, and they've got beautiful meadows, and we're not allowed to mow ours until the 15th of July, and they'll mow theirs in the middle of June, and yet theirs are flower rich and there's hardly any weeds anywhere. So it's obviously not when you mow that's making the difference. And we have less flowers now by mowing later. This year we got a derogation to mow early, and we had some very young pheasants, not that they're a particularly important species, but the lad that was mowing carefully ushered them into a safe area, and we still see them, so they're fine. So I think people are aware that there are ground nesting birds and they will leave the area around it.
They can do that if they've got small tackle.
Yes, obviously. Yes, it's true. It is true.
Little tractors, little trailers, little mowers.
But most of the people that have got the sort of land where you're going to get ground nesting birds tend to have the little tackle and the smaller trailers, whereas most of the people who've got fields that are sort of ryegrass monoculture and big tackle don't have the ground nesting birds, because the ground nesting birds don't want to go and live in those fields and it's not right for them. So I don't think it's as much of a problem. I think people who want to keep the hay meadows as traditional hay meadows are sort of people that are going to notice, we've got some birds nesting there, we'll avoid that bottom bit of that field. But we're not getting the ground nesting birds anymore anyway. There's nothing like as many as when
I was going to say, what have you noticed in terms of wildlife?
When we first moved in, there were so many curlews. It's been about 8-9 years ago. I can remember going for a walk with a family that came to visit us and just watching and listening to, well, tens, twenties of curlews flying round. And this year there's been one solitary one going round. That makes me quite sad. That's changed. But I also know that it's changed on the coast, so it's not necessarily what we're doing round here. The curlews aren't there on the coast to come over here and nest, are they? there's something bigger afoot. I don't think it's to do with the farming practices here.
The RSPB are convinced that the whole picture does relate to farming practice across the country in terms of the loss of farmland birds, but you know, that's the picture nationally. If you don't have the large populations wherever they might be moving around from.
Not convinced, because I think round here things haven't changed a lot and we haven't got as many, and they would have come back here because it's a good place. But the makeup of birds has changed.
Obviously, one of the big issues with waders has always been about drainage, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so, but quite interesting. Our fields are wetter now than they have been for years, so. But because we weren't allowed to top our rushes, they've got so rank that no self-respecting ground nesting bird was going to nest in them, because they would be threatened. What they want is a little clump so that they can see their predators, and what we've got is a very wet field with rushes so close together that birds can't nest in it. So
obviously this has been a freakishly dry summer, hasn't it, in terms of extreme weather?
Yeah.
What impact has that had around here that you've seen driving around, not just on your own land?
Been the obvious impacts, that there's been not an awful lot of fields to graze, so a lot of fields haven't been mown because the cows have gone in and grazed it, because the grass that's been in the fields that are supposed to be eating hasn't grown fast enough. And interestingly enough, that sort of maybe combined with some farms that have been shut down for TB, they've also been really stuck for grazing. I know somebody who's not been able to mow because he's had to graze it, because he can't sell all his cattle because they're shut down with TB, and cows have got to eat some things. I think we've been able to get onto our rushes and we've been able to mow them, all of them, for the first time since we've moved in here. We strimmed nearly all of them 1 year, and the first time we strimmed them, the following spring, we got ragged robin, loads of it, which we'd never had before. It just suddenly come back, and a lot of bugle, and as the rushes have got closer together, that's actually got less. Now I'm wondering, this spring, it's going to be really interesting to see if we get even more, because that ragged robin had obviously come from a seed bank that's been exposed, when a bit like when you coppice trees.
I remember one of the things that you talked about a lot was the sort of assistance you'd given to farmers about the NVZs and all that. Have you still been involved with that?
No, because we don't get basic payment scheme anymore, and we're not considered a farm anymore. Well, there hasn't been the compulsion to do the same paperwork, because we're not going to lose anything by not doing it. They can't take our basic payment scheme away from us because we don't have any. So I'm not really up anymore. I was always a bit of a paperwork nerd, which is why I'd help other people, but I don't need to do it now, so it's one job less.
Yeah. So what about your other projects and what you're doing here? Because you are still working as a sort of an educational centre, aren't you?
Yeah, I did educational access as part of my higher level stewardship. So I've been having groups of children on the farm. I have to do at least 4 visits a year. I usually end up doing about 10. But because my stewardship's coming to an end, I won't be doing it anymore, because I'm getting older too. And, you know, if they come for a visit of sort of 2 hours or an afternoon, it takes me a day and a half to prepare for it.
So what's going on your farm now, on your small holding? What is happening?
At the moment, we let the land to a young farmer, but we try and manage it for conservation as much as we can. But next year, because we're going to be able to top as much as we can, we're going to try and get on top of the thistles in the permanent pasture. And what we might actually do is, we'll top it aggressively for a year or so, and then we might sort of rotate the hay meadows a bit more, because we haven't been allowed to let the grass grow as a hay meadow either. So it's just all become really strange in there. It's not right.
From talking to you before, you've learned an awful lot, haven't you, about grassland management?
Yeah.
And how do you see the future of what it is you want to do now that you're free of the stewardship?
One of the things that's happened is that we have far more hay rattle, but the hay rattle seems to have come at the expense of other flowers. So we haven't got such a variety of flowers as we have before. We might have more of some particular flowers. And I think that's got a lot to do with always mowing it after July the 15th. That allows some flowers to grow and seed, but if every now and again, like this year, we could have mowed really early, we could have mowed in the middle of June, that actually allows some of the later flowers like scabious to grow and seed. And I think you end up with a wider variety of flowers. So it will be quite nice to see what happens when we mow the meadows when we think they're right to mow and the weather's right, which is what they used to do. And it will be interesting to see over 10 years of having what will inevitably be a random mowing pattern, because the weather is a fairly random pattern, whether we end up with more flowers. I think we will. So it's just going to be an interesting comparison. We have woodland that we're managing as well, because that's changed a lot, because we've got ash dieback now. It's not a major problem. Not all of the trees have got it. Some of them have, some of them haven't. Some of them are obviously still really healthy. We've got to thin them anyway, so we're just thinning the ones that are dying. So it's just a natural process. And we've replanted an area with very diverse species. Oh, it's raised some eyebrows because we put some eucalyptus in.
Oh gosh, okay.
Why not? I've been going to some seminars on tree diseases and talking to people in the Forestry Commission. One of the things is the more diverse range of trees that you have, the more resilient you're going to be to disease. But because of where we live and because of the type of soil we've got, not everything will grow happily here. And I was sort of going down the list of trees thinking, what might grow here and what will be happy here? And I know eucalyptus grows because somebody's got some in the garden down there. It grows really well. And I sort of thought, well, why not? You know, really, why not? And it caused a few raised eyebrows with some naturalists, but it's not a native species. And I said, yeah, but our climate might not be a traditional native climate for much longer, and it's providing some resilience. We're not planting a eucalyptus forest. We've got about 25 eucalyptus trees, some of which will obviously not survive. But in all of this dry weather, several of the sort of native species that we've planted have really struggled. The beech haven't liked it being so dry at all. The eucalyptus have gone absolutely mad, and they're the ones that have really flourished in the dry weather. And I think that says a lot. We're trying to increase the resilience, and there was a little bit of lateral thinking there.
So I was going to ask, do you face the sort of the future in terms of changing climate and extreme weather? How do you feel about that, or what's your response to that really?
I don't think we know what it's going to be like, and we've always had freak summers and we've had hot dry summers, and climate change we don't know what it's going to mean really, do we? I don't know enough about it really.
Okay. Got lots of people saying about all the businessmen buying up these farmhouses and seeing a different trend now about country properties.
Yeah, I think what worries me a lot is partly planning policy and partly much more complex transport policies and things, that we're not getting young families out here. Young families can't afford to come out here, but for example, the house straight across the valley, that ought to be a family house, it's a lovely house, has been turned into a party house that guests go to for fun. And one only about 200 yards away is also a party house, and that should have been a family house, and it should have been a small holding with people living there, and that's inevitably going to change. We have a holiday cottage there that we would have liked to have turned into a house for our son, but planning won't let us. And he can't afford to buy a house here. You know, my neighbours say that the daughter's moved into Buxton because they can't afford to buy a family house out here. It's cheaper to buy a family house in town. So I think that's got all sorts of implications for schools and services, and whether it will come a full cycle in the end.
So it's turning the countryside into a playground, not a working place.
Well, I think the countryside's still a working place, but I think it's a different working place, isn't it? I mean, lots of village schools round about have closed or are struggling for numbers, and I suspect if you come back in 10 years, you'll find more have closed. I'm thinking of Flash School when that closed, because there aren't the children to go to the schools, and they used to be thriving. It's changed, yeah. And services have changed, transport's changed. If we had much, much, much better public transport, maybe we'd get... Well, they still couldn't afford the houses. It would